If they wanted us to know, we'd know by now.
Do you think the warning could have come from someone else?
Corey ventured. She sat cross-legged on the floor, somewhat distracted by the synth skin patch quickly fusing the cut on her forehead.
Or maybe one of the bombers changed her mind at the last minute, and all she could do was give us a warning?
Possible, but unlikely. Whoever this is, they wanted us to be confused and angry. They're going to make sure we stay that way. Leia sighed as the doctor approached. You're going to tell me I need to stop talking immediately, aren't you? Indeed not. Harder Colonia's coolly precise speech did little to disguise either her compassion or her sly humor. I'm going to tell you that you needed to stop talking quite a while ago. All right, all right. Leia tucked escaped strands of hair back into her braid, slipped the breathing mask on, and dropped into the Bacta. Disgusting stuff, Bacta. Its viscosity seemed to mark the exact halfway point between liquid and slime. Leia's eyes remained tightly shut, and the fluid's temperature was warm, but she couldn't escape the feeling that she'd been swallowed alive. Many Bacta patients reacted this way, which was why doctors injected sedatives first. Sure enough, as Leia floated in the tank, one lock of her hair swaying around her like seaweed, she felt the first wave of relaxation overtaking her. Stay focused, she told herself. You need to think this through, step by step. Do you remember seeing anyone suspicious? But the tranquilizing pull of the drugs was stronger than gravity. Leia felt as if she were drifting into a realm without pain, without fear. Maybe this was what it was like to be in the womb. I wasn't alone there, though. Luke was with me. Where's Luke? She remained conscious as they lifted her from the tank, wrapped her long hair in towels, and eased her onto a hover cot. Leia even remembered looking up at Dr. Colonia and a med droid as they loaded her onto a transport. And if her memory served, she managed to get to her feet and walk into her own quarters with only a little assistance from the doctor. Next had come the moment when she flopped down onto her own bed, and after that, she knew nothing at all. Not for a very long time. Leia woke with a dry mouth and fuzzy thoughts. Her body felt light, completely free from pain, and the sedative had not entirely released its hold on her mind. In the first few instants, she simply enjoyed the experience of lying in a trance where fear could never touch her. But memory demanded its due, that and the red flashing lights on her comm panel. Groaning, she pushed herself onto her elbows and looked at the nearest screen. Projected onto it was the information that she had suffered a concussion, moderate damage to her internal organs, and a few broken ribs, all of which the Bacta had repaired. For the next few days, she would be restricted to limited physical exertion only. A med droid would return that night to confirm her successful treatment. Great, Leia muttered. But that's not the damage I'm worried about. Next, she brought up the holos she'd been sent. Her filters had been preset to sort them by her specific priorities, which meant the political messages would be at the bottom. The first image that flickered into being was Han's face, and he looked more stricken than she had seen him in years.
Leia, sweetheart, Greer tells me you're sleeping the Bacta off. But when I heard somebody bombed the Senate and saw those pictures...
He shook his head as if trying to cast the images out of his mind.
If I hadn't gotten your message, I would have gone out of my head. I'm just glad you're all right. Contact me when you're up and around again, and if you change your mind about me coming to Hosnian Prime, just say the word.
Han gave her the smile that had never failed to stop her heart.
I love you.
Han's image faded. Leia hoped the next message would be from Ben or Luke, but instead Chewbacca appeared, growling his wishes for her recovery and his plans to deal harshly with whoever was identified as the culprit. Leia smiled at the Wookiee's typical bluster, trying to overcome her disappointment. The next few dozen all appeared to be from political figures repeating stock phrases about shock, outrage, gratitude for her survival, and hopes for her recovery. Leia clicked through them as speedily as she could, pausing only for the updates that told her Varish's broken limb would be like new tomorrow, and Ty Lin had escaped with no more than a scratch. Ransom Casterfo had sent one of the final messages, and his was the only one that seemed to have come from a human rather than a politician. "I tried to make myself believe it, and I can't, even though I was there. Thank the Force it was no worse. Your staff says you'll be well in the morning, but if you need anything, let me know." He had offered as a friend rather than as a political favor. Leia couldn't help being amused by the thought of asking him to fetch her some soup, but she suspected he'd actually follow through. Next, she dipped into the information channels, sampling news both official and organic. At this point, most people were expressing genuine shock and concern. How long had it been since she'd heard centrist and populist worlds saying the same thing? How long since they'd been unified by shared feelings? If only we could use this incident to build unity between our planets, Leia thought. But she knew they wouldn't be so lucky. Within a day, the accusations would begin.
"Isn't it obvious?" said Oris Madmund, the junior senator from Coruscant, as he walked along the halls of the main Senate building beside Ransom Casterfo. "Yesterday's bombing was the populists' work."
"I beg your pardon?"
Ransom stared at Madmund, who puffed up in indignation at even having been questioned.
"The populists set the bomb themselves in order to paint themselves as heroic victims, and to throw suspicion on us. A crime as vile as it is transparent. Really, Casterfo, you must stop being so naive."
Had everyone gone completely mad?
"Don't be absurd. Aren't the populists supposed to be the conspiracy theorists? The risk was too extreme to everyone involved for anyone in the Senate to have done this. It can only be some unknown terrorist faction."
Madmund retorted,
"Tell that to the populists who are already blaming us. They're pointing fingers at us even now. Open your eyes."
Throughout the Senate that day, fear and distrust ruled. Security alerts went off 5 times before lunch. Staffers looked wild-eyed and hurried between offices as if the corridors were somehow inherently more dangerous. Messages filled Ransom's queue during every call he took, and no sooner could he return one of them than the queue would promptly double. He remained shaken by Mad Moon's accusations all day. Not because he believed them. It was ridiculous to think that even extremist populists would go to such lengths. Ransom did not assume their innocence out of naivete, but because of 2 unquestionable facts. One, the populists wouldn't have endangered the life of their likely candidate for first senator. And 2, populists were too fractious and argumentative to manage a conspiracy. Sometimes he found it miraculous the populists could even agree on where to sit.
"I can work on reasoning with my own side," Ransom decided. "But the populists will only listen to one of their own."
And there was no question in his mind as to who that person should be. So shortly after leaving his offices for the day, he visited Princess Leia's home for the first time. "What's that?" Leia asked as she stood in the doorway in a simple blue gown, her hair in its usual loose braid. He held out the box he'd managed to procure.
"A 12 buttersweet puffs. To heal what ails you."
She laughed as she looked down at the small box of pastries.
"This is even better than soup."
"Beg pardon?"
"It's nothing."
Leia took the box from him and nodded toward her rooms.
"Please, come in."
Ransom already knew that Princess Leia didn't stand on ceremony or demand luxury. Even so, the simplicity of her quarters caught him by surprise. She owned little, all of it attractive but functional, and nearly everything in soft shades of white and gray. On the wall hung the room's one ornament, an elegant painting of Gadolinian origin. bold in brilliant swathes of red. She noticed him looking at it. A birthday gift from Ty Lin Gar a few years ago. Maybe my favorite gift ever. At least until these.
Settling the box of baked goods on the table, she motioned for Ransom to sit as well.
"You have a lovely home," he said.
Leia chuckled. "You say that now. Come back sometime after my husband's been home for a few weeks. Socks everywhere."
Although she made a joke of it, Ransom recognized in that moment that she missed her husband greatly. In one corner played the official broadcasts of at least a dozen worlds, cycling in rapid succession. Leia must have pre-programmed the selection, and an auto-translate projected dark letters of text beneath the images. Suspicion mounts as investigation into Senate bombing continues. So-called napkin bombing, alleged to be work of centrist leaders. Frame job? How far will the populists go to discredit the centrists? The litany ran on, paranoia upon paranoia, mostly blame being batted back and forth between the two political parties, save for the Ithorian news service, which inexplicably seemed to be convinced the Hutts were behind it all.
"I trust you have the good sense to know this," Ransom began. "But so many foolish people are speaking today, I must be clear. This was not the work of the centrists."
"I believe you," Leia said, never glancing away from the newscasts as she opened the box he'd given her.
"It wasn't the populists either. We have some fools in the ranks, but nobody's this big a fool."
"Do you think you can convince the populists of our innocence?"
"Not through logic, or good sense, or even common decency, if that's what you were hoping for. The only way we can bridge this gap is by figuring out who's really responsible." She sighed and took a bite of her puff. Ransom felt his spirits sink. It wasn't as if he hadn't known this even before speaking to her. He had simply hoped her greater experience and connections might point to a solution he hadn't yet seen. But no. The quagmire was just as deep as he'd feared.
"I suppose investigators have yet to come up with any actual evidence."
"You didn't see? Hold on."
Leia cycled through the hollows more swiftly, until they hit upon one showing security footage of a Twi'lek woman darting into a door of the conference building, then swiftly out again. Her dark coverall resembled that of the catering staff. The sunshades she wore would have struck no one as peculiar, not on so sunny a day as yesterday.
"Ryloth?
It can't be. They haven't the resources or the motive." Ransom folded his arms as he considered the possibilities.
"Anyone could hire a Twi'lek mercenary."
"Agreed. This footage only emerged in the past couple of hours, but I still expect Ryloth to be accused on the Senate floor. And then the Hutts, and who knows who else. But the brunt of the suspicion will be focused on extremists in our own parties. Count on it." Ransom could imagine the endless debates that would result. Could it even endanger the coming election? Only a first senator could shepherd them through this crisis. The galaxy needed leadership more than ever.
"Who do you think did it?"
"I don't know," Leia said, expression thoughtful. "Still, doesn't it strike you as peculiar that this happened just as we began investigating a massive criminal cartel?"
"You suspect Rin Riven Dai?"
The idea had never occurred to Ransom, and he did not find it persuasive.
"His sort try to avoid government attention, not provoke it. He would have little to gain by bombing a Senate building, and much to lose. Also, if he were to set a bomb, he's not the type to warn anyone."
"Agreed. It's not Rin Riven Dai. But whoever it is making all that money, whoever set him up in the first place, that might be a different story." The hollow flickered, showing images of the alleged Twi'lek bomber over and over again. Her face was unrecognizable from the footage, and undoubtedly she had traveled to Hosni in Prime under false ID. Yet it would be broadcast into infinity, because it gave the illusion of discovery, the shadow of an answer they might never find.
"That's possible," Ransom finally said. "I admit the timing would be rather convenient, but we're still only guessing."
Leia gave him a look. Good thing we're investigating this anyway, isn't it?
So it is.
He began to warm to the idea of the hunt. Perhaps the cartel they sought had nothing to do with this bombing, but Ransom had rarely felt so helpless in his life as he had yesterday when he heard the explosion. Running out to see the rubble, breathing in the acrid, chemical-tinged air. It had brought back terrible memories of Ryosa after the Empire had emptied his world out and thrown it away. For an instant, he had been a young, scrawny boy again, newly orphaned, lost and hungry amid the devastation. At least this investigation let them do something meaningful, something useful. And if they got to the bottom of the bombing plot in the process, so much the better.
I should arrange a trip to Daxam 4 immediately, Ransom said. He had read her latest communique about Greer and Joff's intel only shortly before the explosion. Search for these Amaxine warriors, whoever or whatever they are. In fact, I already have a convincing pretext for a personal visit.
Leia tilted her head. What's that?
It touches on a sore subject.
Now you have to tell me.
My collection of historical artifacts.
Leaving the word imperial out of it seemed to do the trick. At any rate, Leia didn't react.
Recently, someone in collector's circles began advertising a very rare object for sale, and it caught my attention. Not least because the seller lives on Daxam 4. I opened some preliminary discussions, and I believe I can arrange to purchase the item in person.
Nodding, Leia asked, "Do you think the seller could be connected to the Amaxines? There's nothing that specifically connects that old legend to the Empire."
"I have no reason to think so. But if this individual isn't connected, perhaps they can provide information we can use. At any rate, it should prove a convincing cover story for me to snoop around on the planet's surface."
He smiled.
"I think I'm catching on to this espionage thing."
"Be careful," she said. "When you think you've finally figured things out, that's usually when your plans go to hell." Ransom had found this held true for things far beyond espionage. He nodded in assent. Then Leia added, "Do me a favor. Take Greer with you." Just when he thought they were becoming friends.
"Do you really feel the need to have me watched? Still?"
"What? No." Leia looked genuinely indignant. "Would you rather go into a dangerous situation without backup? If so, feel free. Besides, I think this is the kind of assignment she could handle and enjoy." The paranoia of the day must have begun to infect his brain.
"My apologies. A fellow traveler would be welcome. You must need your assistant, though. I could ask Seastriker.
Actually, Joff Seastriker's coming with me to Ryloth, once the Senate sends someone to investigate there."
Leia's smile was thin.
"Neither he nor the Senate knows that yet. But give it a few days."
Ransom shook his head in wonder. "Always a step ahead, aren't you?"
Her gaze turned back to the hollows, which were now showing the smoldering rubble of the Senate building again. "I only wish."
Chapter 15. Ransom Casterfo had believed Leia when she told him Greer was coming along to Daxam 4 as backup, not as a sign of any mistrust. However, no one seemed to have informed Greer of this.
"Coming out of hyperspace in 5, she said coolly.
The first words she'd spoken since shortly after they'd left Hosnian Prime. Her thick black hair flowed free down her back, the only element of her body or personality that didn't seem to be under strict control.
"Strap in."
Greer had the helm of the vessel they'd rented for the journey, a small G-Con courier. After some deliberation, Ransom had chosen this ship because it was modern and stylish. He was traveling under his true identity, after all, and had to look the part. But also commonplace, unlikely to attract attention on its own. He had expected an experienced pilot like Greer to have some opinion on the matter, but he had the distinct sense that she wouldn't have cared whether he'd brought a two-person orbit hopper or a superstar destroyer.
"I suppose it's beneath you," he said.
That earned a swift sideways glance.
"What do you mean?"
Ransom gestured around the sleek black cockpit with his long-fingered hands, clearly referring to the whole ship. The G-Con. Too mundane for someone who used to be an elite racer.
It's fine, she said shortly.
Another few moments of silence passed, during which Ransom gave up on any attempts at conversation. But then she added,
I was hardly elite.
Nonsense. Senator Organa shared your bona fides before this mission began, you know.
If Greer Sonnel assumed she was the only one Leia talked to, time she learned otherwise.
Junior Sabres winner, a professional racer on the Crystal Cairn team for 2 years, until you retired suddenly 3 years ago. A short career, but an illustrious one, given the races you competed in. And you retired undefeated.
Greer contested none of this, but she stared at her panel with unshaking attention, even more than required when leaving hyperspace.
2 years doesn't make you elite.
Although Ransom didn't consider himself a vain man, he had learned during his hardscrabble childhood on Ryosa that he had to use every asset he had. That was the only way to get ahead. Weak people could not expect admiration or assistance, and so he would prove he was not weak. He bought the best clothes he could afford, made influential connections and let others know about them, and played up every skill he could honestly claim. So why would someone discount her own skills? Abandon her own fame? It made no sense to him. Weary of trying to get through to Greer, Ransom leaned back in his seat.
As you like.
Her hand closed over the handle for the hyperdrive.
Slipping out in 3, 2, 1, mark.
The courier shuddered as the stars froze in their proper places again. Beneath them lay Daxam 4, vivid among the blackness of space with its orange deserts and small teal-blue seas. Almost no cloud cover shielded the world or offered any promise of rain. Yet in this stark, largely uninhabited area of space, the rough terrain of Daxam 4 had to count as an oasis.
Okay.
Greer punched a few controls, including the one to send an automatic signal requesting a berth at the capital city's spaceport.
How are you going to play this?
You're actually interested now?
Ransom could hear how priggish his voice sounded, and on one level he loathed himself for it. But by now he knew Greer Sonnel wouldn't respond to friendliness. She would have to be the one to initiate the thaw. His comment earned him an arched eyebrow, but she did at least swivel her seat to face his.
I'm your backup. If I don't know where you're going or when, then I won't be much good at keeping you alive.
But if you follow me, you're likely to scare off the types of people we're looking for.
Ransom reached into the pocket of his dark red cloak and pulled out his comm device to show her the messages he'd sent and received.
Collectors of Imperial artifacts tend to have a jaded view of New Republic officials.
Greer took the comm device in her hand, staring down at the screen.
You're going to buy one of the helmets of the Emperor's personal guard?
Exactly.
Which was actually very exciting. Ransom had already mentally selected a place of honor for it on his wall, assuming, of course, it was genuine. But beside the point.
I'm already known in these circles and was able to arrange a potential transaction. A seller who goes by the name Crimson Blade.
What?
Greer frowned.
Is that his real name?
No.
Ransom wanted to hedge.
In the collecting scene, we often operate under names not our own. I go by my real identity, but others prefer more, colorful terms.
Emperor's Wrath, Interceptor Fire, Avenger of Jakku. Ridiculous, the lot of them. Ransom knew this to be merely role-playing, the assumption of a part they might take on in reenactments, but he didn't trust an outsider to understand that. Fortunately, Greer showed no interest.
So you have no idea who this seller really is?
It hardly matters, because he turned out to have one of these helmets. A prize more than valuable enough to warrant a personal visit. He may well be tied to the groups we seek. If not, he should know some individuals who are. Once I've established a connection with him, I can build on that.
Greer considered that in silence for a few moments before she handed back his device, pursing her lips as if to say, "Not bad."
"And I guess I'm your pilot?"
As though he needed one.
"Let's pretend you're a member of my staff rather than Senator Organa's. If they check, we can make it seem as if I just hired you out from under Leia's nose a couple of weeks ago, and the napkin bombing kept records from being updated in a timely fashion."
Greer nodded as their console began to blink with their approved landing time and coordinates.
"Smart."
"Was that a compliment?"
"No, it couldn't have been. You spoke the words out loud without bursting into flames."
"Spare me," she said.
Was that the hint of a smile on her full lips? Surely, Ransom had imagined it.
Daxum 4 somehow managed to look even more forbidding from the surface. The deep orange sands, stretching out for kilometers, made Ransom think of other desert worlds he had visited, where the sun beat down mercilessly. At the time, he'd loathed the heat, but he almost missed it now. Despite Daxum 4's two suns, the planet orbited at the very edge of its solar system, far enough that the chill ran deep even at twice noon. Ransom had felt somewhat ostentatious packing a fur cloak, but at the moment he couldn't have cared less whether anyone else found his clothing grandiose. He might have frozen stiff by now without it. Greer, of course, showed no sign of discomfort, even though she wore mere woolens. But Pomarthan robes were famous for their warmth, and she had layered beige and blue ones, belting them close and draping both hoods over her head. Together, they walked through the streets of the city. Correction, he thought. Through what passes for a city on this barren rock? Only a few streets formed the town center, each one lined with low, scrubby houses or shops. He found it difficult to tell one from the other, since most structures had been cast from the same mold. Square, squat cubes of adobe or stucco, with their whitewashed surfaces stained reddish by the sand.
"One question," Greer said. "This guard's helmet is expensive, right?"
"Rather."
As much as Ransom longed to add it to his collection, he could never have justified the expenditure were it not part of this mission.
"So whoever owns it has to have serious money."
Greer's gaze went up and down the desolate street.
"If I had serious money, I'd live somewhere else."
She had a good point. This crimson sword had wealth, and yet chose to remain on Daxum 4, a planet that had only one possible advantage Ransom could see. It was obscure, rarely visited, and therefore out of sight. Also, large sums of the money from Rin Riven Dai's cartel are being funneled onto this world. Hard to imagine what they're spending it on. Greer nodded.
"Not on the nightlife, that's for sure."
Were there spice warehouses here? Vaults of valuable goods waiting to be sold for quick, laundered credits? If you hid such things on a world like this, you could be fairly certain they would stay hidden.
Until now, he thought with some pride.
His appointment was at a tea house, which proved to be a small, rundown establishment with poor lighting and cheap booths. Small lanterns hung from the ceiling, casting a dim, gold light that didn't penetrate the shadows. Ransom scanned the room and recognized his target at first sight. She would have stood out in any room. Perhaps 60 years of age, she had long, wiry hair that curled halfway down her back, black, streaked through with silver. Thin and angular, she gave the impression of someone who had been carved by time into her purest, simplest form, as if all softness had been stripped away. Small white scars marked areas of her forehead, left cheek, and throat. Her dark eyes were already focused on him, and she sat in a corner that allowed no one to approach her from behind. But none of this was the reason Ransom immediately knew her. This was the woman from the casino on Bastatha. the one who had not wanted to be noticed. Ransom glanced at Greer and nodded toward the counter across the room, where lone patrons could sit on low wooden stools and take their tea. Although he could tell Greer bridled at being so casually ordered around, she knew her obedience was necessary to their cover. As she walked off, he turned back to Crimson Sword. He knew better than to lie outright.
"Have we met before?"
he said as he took his seat opposite her.
"You look very familiar."
"I am Arlys Hadrossian, and no, we haven't met."
Her low, husky voice sounded like that of someone far older, or a spice fiend who had been at it too long. But Ransom suspected that rasp had more to do with the scars on her throat.
"However, we visited Bastatha at the same time, not so very long ago. I took note of the senatorial delegation."
"Careful,"
Ransom told himself. She had to know that he'd been investigating Rinriven Dai and would be on her guard. Yet Hadrossian had agreed to sell to him, even knowing his real identity, which meant she thought he might prove friend rather than foe. He would have to tread a very cautious path to decrease her suspicion and increase her hopes.
"When we were running errands for Ryloth," he said darkly, "hardly the proper business of a senator. But we flushed a few local mobsters out for the authorities, so I suppose it wasn't a total waste."
"You think little of mobsters, I take it?"
Hadrossian said this as if she did, too. Ransom decided to be completely honest in his answer, since he could think of no fib that would serve him better.
"Grubbing for credits? Making money off edicts? What kind of business is that? What kind of life?"
"I agree, Senator Costerfo. We are meant for better things."
Hadrossian's smile sliced across her face like a blade.
"A few rounds of sabacc in a casino may serve one night's purpose, but real rewards do not come from mere games of chance."
"Agreed."
"I set up this purchase to assess her. She could only have agreed to it in order to assess me in turn.
What is it she hopes to find?"
He nodded at the server who had approached the table, an actual human instead of a droid, evidence of this planet's poverty, and chose one of the teas from the cart at random. It proved to be fragrant and sweet, and the ceramic cup warmed his hands. Ransom was grateful, not least because it gave him a moment to collect his thoughts.
"So," he began, "how did you come about the helmet?"
He expected the usual sort of story. Collected from another collector, on and on, back to the usual foggy tales about a heroic friend or ancestor who had personally taken Imperial artifacts as trophies of war. But Hadrossian surprised him again.
"I served in the Imperial Starfleet, Senator Costerfo. So did many members of my family and many friends. The helmet belonged to my elder brother."
She cast her eyes down at her cup of tea, the first time her attention had been anything less than razor sharp.
"He became seriously ill the day before Palpatine left for the second Death Star, and so lost his chance to accompany the Emperor on that final journey. Had he gone along, who knows? Perhaps history would have been rewritten."
How precisely would a lone Imperial guard have thwarted the entire Rebel fleet? But people convinced themselves of stranger things than this in order to believe they could have altered fate.
"Your brother agreed to part with the helmet? I should have thought he would treasure it forever."
"He returned to regular service after Palpatine's death, and was one of those who fell at Jakku. This helmet is one of the few things I have left of him."
"Then I'm even more surprised you're willing to sell such a keepsake," Ransom said.
"I wouldn't have sold it to just anyone. You were exactly the sort of customer I hoped for."
Her eyes crinkled at the edges, hinting at the smile she suppressed.
"All this time, I thought I set up this sale. But this isn't my snare. It's hers."
Normally, Ransom would have been chagrined to have strolled so easily into a trap. Instead, relief washed over him. Hadrosian would be less likely to suspect his agenda because she had orchestrated their meeting for purposes of her own. He asked himself how he would have acted if he really were here only as a buyer. Leaning across the table, he said, "Tell me, what did you do in the Imperial Starfleet?" Hadrosian smiled easily this time.
"You want to hear some war stories? Your interest in the Empire's history is well known, Senator Castelfo, but I doubt such an important man has the time."
"I'll make the time."
The next 2 hours were filled with tales of the Imperial Starfleet, particularly Hadrosian's youthful duties as a TIE pilot. Later, she had become an ISB officer.
"More interesting," she confided, "but only in the moment, not in the retelling."
Ransom took note of that. Anyone admitted to the Empire's internal security force had been considered loyal to the core. But he kept the conversation focused on her days chasing down spice runners around Kessel and Care of Doi. He didn't have to pretend to be fascinated. Hadrosian's stories were amazing. They parted well, with an appointment the next day for the actual purchase of the helmet.
"Not here," Hadrosian said. "I'll send the coordinates for my territory in the Western Wastes. A quick hour's flight, no more. But please, ask your staffer,"
she nodded toward Greer, who remained in place at the counter,
"to remain behind. I prefer to keep my transactions confidential."
Was this the same sort of setup Leia had faced on Bastatha? Ransom doubted it. Hadrosian had taken this meeting to sound him out, and he felt sure he'd passed her test. Whatever trust he'd earned could only be spoiled by insisting on Greer's presence.
"Understandable," he said. "I look forward to it. Will you have more stories for me?"
Hadrosian inclined her head.
"Many more, Senator Castelfo."
Although he managed to hold on to his elation until he and Greer were well away from the tea house, once they were in the clear, Ransom recounted every detail of his conversation with Arlie's Hadrosian. Greer didn't seem to share his enthusiasm, but he kept going, talking the entire way back to the spaceport hangar.
"And still completely loyal to the Empire. As though she'd taken her oath yesterday, I swear."
"Must be nice for you," Greer said.
It took Ransom a moment to process that.
"Excuse me?"
"Meeting someone who shares so many of your interests. Like, say, worshipping the Empire."
He would have been less offended if she'd slapped him.
"I do not worship the Empire. Haven't you been listening? Don't you realize this means we're on the right track?"
"I realize we're getting closer to finding out what's happening on Daxam 4, Greer said. "But I'm still not sure which track you're on."
Ransom refused to dignify that with an answer. He stalked past her, determined to grab what he needed from the ship and head to the rooms he'd rented for the night. All his careful conversation, all his planning, and still he won only sneers. Was nothing he did ever going to be good enough for Leia's self-righteous team? That night, long after dark had fallen, Greer took the G-Con courier out for a spin.
"I wonder if Castelfo will see it and think I'm ditching him," she thought.
By now, the man was almost certainly asleep. But she couldn't shake the idea, largely because she felt guilty. Snapping at the guy did no one any good. Princess Leia had chosen to trust Ransom Castelfo. That made it Greer's job to help him. He'd done some quick talking today and quicker thinking. If he hadn't, Hadrosian might have realized she wasn't playing them as smoothly as she'd hoped. Besides, he'd shown courage when he went to rescue Leia from Rin Riven Dai, and apparently he'd even visited the princess in the aftermath of the bombing. But Castelfo still rankled Greer on every level. The one thing she couldn't shake was something Princess Leia had said on Bastatha. "Can't you just see him in an Imperial uniform?" Pamarth's relationship with the Empire had been a complex one. In the earliest years of Palpatine's rule, Its citizens had flocked to join the Imperial Starfleet as pilots and gunners, funneling their martial spirit into the Emperor's armies. No one at Pamarth had ever been able to understand the Republic's use of clone soldiers to replace citizen warriors, and they were eager for new battles, new conquests. But all that changed after the Death Star destroyed Alderaan. The idea of firing upon civilians and soldiers alike, from a distance, without taking the slightest personal risk in return. Every true warrior of Pamarth knew that to be the foulest kind of cowardice. Many deserted immediately, and within the year, hundreds had joined the Rebel Alliance, including Greer's parents. She had grown up listening to their stories of battle against the Empire. Casterfo said he was no admirer of the Empire, but he acted like one. Surely that was what irritated her about him so.
Or maybe, she admitted to herself, you're just jealous of how carefree he can be. How optimistic. How he gets to lead a life with no limits, while you're...
Greer breathed out sharply in frustration as she banked the courier, soaring upward into the night. With every meter she rose from the ground, she felt freer. Daxam-4's near-cloudless atmosphere meant a broad vista of stars stretching out before her, so that she could hardly tell whether she was in space or the sky. Gradually she relaxed, easing into a high flight that would trace a wide circle around the city. Low winds, light atmosphere. The flying was easy, and Greer's thoughts had begun to wander, when signals at the far western edge of her flight plan began to blink at the rim of her view screen. Frowning, she focused more tightly on them to get a good read. According to her records, she was well outside the main air traffic lanes, and Daxam-4 was so deserted she wouldn't have expected to see many craft at all.
Maybe they're cloud sowers, or standard sentries, she mused.
But these ships were too fast for any of that. They could only be starfighters, which meant she'd found the Amaxine warriors. Greer quickly damped down her own signals and swooped lower so she'd be harder to detect. Soon she skimmed only meters above the ground, dust swirling beneath the courier as she studied her readouts. 15, 22, no. Nearly 30 starfighters flew over the far western wastes and in military formation. She set her scanning range to maximum, and her eyes widened as she realized at least 5 other squadrons were practicing identical maneuvers. Few militias were so large. Even fewer flew with such precision. And almost none had a fleet of starfighters as fast and well-armed as those of the New Republic fleet. That settled it. The Amaxines were far more than a group of over-enthusiastic patrollers. They were a paramilitary organization, one with significant funds, ties to organized crime, a leader who would no doubt turn out to be someone close to Arlys Hadrosian, if not Hadrosian herself, and an appointment with Ransom Casterfo, first thing in the morning. Greer muttered,
"We'd better hope he's on our side."
Chapter 16.
Senator Organa, welcome to Lesu and to Ryloth.
Emissary Yendor strode toward the Mirror Bright, his walking staff in one hand. Although he wore the long, tan cape that marked him as an official, he had abandoned his formal robes for a simple brown jacket and pants, leather straps twined around his leku. His casual dress meant that he had complied with her request to keep her arrival low-key. That, and the broad grin on his blue face. Leia smiled in return. It used to be Princess Leia back on Hoth.
We're not on Hoth now,
Yendor said in good humor.
Thank goodness. If I'm never that cold again, it'll be too soon. And I only washed off the last of the Tauntaun stink about a year ago.
They didn't smell that bad.
With all due respect, Your Highness, you never had to muck out their stalls.
Point taken. Leia held out her hand, and as they shook, she took a quick glance around. This was the only spaceport for Lesu, Ryloth's main capital city, yet almost no other activity seemed to be taking place. Ships remained inert. Cargo was neither loaded nor unloaded. Foot traffic seemed minimal. Normally, Leia would have attributed this to a senator's arrival, but as per her instructions, no ceremony had been arranged. Only the emissary and a small group of local security had come to greet them. Lesu's spaceport was this quiet because there was simply not enough traffic to fill the area. Ryloth's trying hard to rebuild from their centuries of oppression, she realized, but they've got a long way to go. To Emissary Yendor, she said only, Princess Leia is fine now, too. Any friend from the Rebellion is a friend for life. You flew with Corona Squadron, didn't you?
Yes, Your Highness.
Yendor's smile became less formal, more proud. Every old soldier liked to be remembered. He glanced past her to the others coming up behind.
Please, introduce me to the rest of your team.
C-3PO, Human-Cyborg Relations.
C-3PO performed a little bow.
Though we have met before, Emissary Yendor, we worked together on recalibrating the thermo units for Echo Base one afternoon, precisely 5 days after our arrival on Hoth. May I say it is a pleasure to see you again.
How could I ever have forgotten that day?
Yendor said, managing to sound sincere. Leia introduced the rest of her party. This is my intern, Cor Sela, and my pilot, Lieutenant Joff Seastriker.
Good to meet you both, Yendor said. Even if you have absolutely no right to be so young.
Corey and Joff gave each other a look. Leia managed not to react to their dismay, but it struck her again how youthful they appeared. Younger even than Ben, with their puppy-fat cheeks and unlined faces. Yet somehow Leia had been a senator at Corey's age, and not even as old as Joff when the Rebellion won the Battle of Endor. Yendor could only be 5 or 6 years older than Leia herself. And if Joff and Corey looked so young to her, how old must she look to them? They had to feel as if they were shepherding a museum piece around the galaxy. To judge by Yendor's expression, he was having the same thoughts. We belong to another age, she thought with a sigh. But we have to make our way in this one. However, the rest of their day felt like living through an era so far distant it ought to have predated the Old Republic.
Is it all written on paper?
Corey said in despair, about 3 hours into their work in the Ryloth archives. Except the stuff that's written on tanned hides. Leia put the ancient vellum to one side, wrinkling her nose. Or on wooden tablets or rolls. But yes, it's all either written or printed. Only Joff Seastriker's thick shock of golden hair showed behind his high stack of leather-bound volumes.
Could they seriously not afford regular holograms or computers or anything? Ever?
No, Lieutenant Seastriker, they couldn't. Leia kept her voice civil, but her staffers needed to understand this. Ryloth has never had much in the way of resources, and whatever they had was traditionally taken away from them by either the Nyctos or the Hutts. They learned that if they wanted to preserve their own version of their history, this was the only way they could do it. We have to respect that, even if it makes our jobs harder. Which it did, immensely. But nobody ever said being a member of the Galactic Senate was fun. She, Corey, Joff, and C-3PO were clustered around a long sandstone table in the heart of the Ryloth archives, a vast, cavernous basement area in which all the planet's records were kept, going back to what seemed to be the beginning of time. Candle droids floated close by, giving Leia enough light to work by, but making the rest of the space feel even colder and darker by contrast.
Here's more to add to the dossier, Your Highness.
C-3PO tapped his metal hand on the page of an open book.
Another mention of Rinriven Dai. This one from approximately 15 years ago.
Corey leaned toward the page, her eyes narrowing as she tried to make out the handwritten words.
It's a list of the Hutt's spice brokers. Rinriven was on the lowest rung of the operation, at least as far as anyone on Ryloth knew.
I'd be willing to bet that was accurate. Leia folded her arms across her chest as she sat back in her chair. She'd worn a lightweight jumpsuit for the journey, appropriate for Lesu's moderate climate, but inadequate to the damp chill of the archives. To judge by what we've seen from Rinriven's dossier so far, up until 7 to 10 years ago, he was no one. Little money, less power, hardly any independent organization of his own. And now? We've turned up enough information to know Rinriven has one of the largest criminal enterprises in the galaxy. C-3PO swiveled his torso to her, tilting his head as if in human curiosity.
Perhaps our information is inaccurate, Your Highness. It comes from humans and other sentient creatures, not machines, and could therefore be faulty.
Leia shook her head. No. Though we don't know everything about Rinriven's operations yet, we've seen too much to doubt that he's at least as powerful as the Twi'leks told us. Probably more.
Well, what about this?
Joth pushed the books in front of him to one side so he could make eye contact with the others again.
Maybe another cartel collapsed around that time. One of the Hutts died without an heir, something like that. Rinriven could have seen an opportunity, stepped in, picked up wherever the other cartel left off.
Leia weighed that idea for a long moment, before saying, "That would be plausible. The only problem is we have no records of any such cartel. Not here, not on Hosnian Prime, nowhere."
Rinriven stayed out of sight long enough, Corey pointed out. We might not have known the other cartel existed. Surely there are others out there we haven't heard about even now.
True. But if Rinriven were merely stepping into a power vacuum, by now we'd have run across traces of whoever it was he was replacing. We haven't. She wished they had. The more she thought about the mysterious origins of Rinriven Dai's operations, the more deeply they unnerved her. As she and Casterfo had speculated, someone else had sponsored Rinriven Dai. Her lone meeting with the Nyctos had taught Leia that the man was no fool, and not the type to readily accept second-tier status from just anyone. Whatever the real power was behind Rinriven's cartel, its reach had to go almost past anything Leia could imagine.
Are you still sure this isn't connected to the Centrists?
Corey ventured, gesturing at the piles of ledgers on the table.
Because all of this suggests Rinriven's money goes to Centrist worlds. That makes me think the original money must have come from there too.
Just because a planet politically aligns itself with the Centrists doesn't say anything about what any individual citizens might do or believe. Leia said the words, and she meant them, but inside, she felt the inexorable tug that told her something was very wrong here. Centrist worlds pride themselves on law and order, she thought, remembering Ransom Casterfo's words about the death penalty on Ryosa. They'd be more likely to pick up on large-scale criminal enterprises operating in their midst. Could every single Centrist world touched by Rinriven's cartel truly be ignorant of his power and reach? Possibly. Few peoples had as much reason to track the Nikto as the Twi'leks did. But Leia now sensed the shape beneath the surface. The immensity of the danger lurking just out of sight, but growing closer all the time. Piloting a top-of-the-line ship like the Mirror Bright to an independent world like Ryloth as part of a secret mission? High-quality adventure. Top grades. Excitement score of 7, maybe 7.5. Spending hours sitting in a musty basement reading words written on actual paper, trying to trace financial records? 0 adventure. Excitement score so low it had actually drained excitement out of other parts of Joff's life, like a black hole engulfing all light and heat.
This stinks, he confided to his one companion on the ship that evening.
I detect no strong chemical components in the onboard atmosphere,
C-3PO replied.
Though, of course, that's not part of my primary programming. We could locate an astromech unit for a more thorough scan of the ship's ventilation systems.
I didn't mean literally. Joff kicked back in the pilot's seat, staring glumly out at the silent stillness of the spaceport.
I meant that this is boring.
I see, sir.
The droid's politeness never flagged. Joff wondered if the droid's programming kept him from ever being bored. Or maybe to C-3PO, humans were so slow and dim-witted that boredom was all he knew. Princess Leia had been invited to some kind of dinner. If the event were a grand state banquet, Joff would probably have been asked to attend as well. However, this was a humbler affair, a private gathering that Emissary Yendor had put together for the princess and some others who had known one another during the war. Corey, meanwhile, was finishing up work in the archives. Until she returned, Joff had nothing to do but guard the ship.
Hey, at least you got a chance to fly this,
Joff reminded himself as he looked at the Mirror Bright's sleek console. Not much consolation, but he had to take what he could get. Just then, the communications unit began to blink with the pattern of lights that meant top priority message. Joff sat up straight. Only someone from the Senate or another high official in the New Republic could send that kind of message. It happened so rarely that his training had never covered how to handle it. Did he answer for Senator Organa? Or would he be violating security protocols even seeing it? He had to try. Joff punched in the appropriate signal.
Mirror Bright receiving, Lieutenant Seastriker here.
Joff?
Senator Casterfo's face took shape on screen.
I take it Leia's not aboard, then.
Banquet.
Should he have phrased that more carefully? Didn't matter. Joff continued.
I can, take a message. Or go get her if it's that urgent.
Not quite that urgent. Though we should act soon.
Casterfo leaned closer to the projector screen, so that his holo seemed to hover in the cockpit itself.
Greer's turned up evidence that the Amaxines are far more than a militia. They seem to be a substantial fighting force in training.
In training for what?
Joff asked. Behind him, Corey walked in, the Mirror Bright's door swishing shut behind her. She frowned as she came closer, listening to the call.
That's the question. But here's the thing. We need to conclusively link Rin Rivendi Dai to the Amaxines post-haste. If we can't bring them down along with Rin Riven, this could be more than a mere criminal matter. The Amaxines might defend him, or avenge him. Given the scale they're operating on, it could even mean open conflict between systems.
Joff straightened in his chair.
All right. What can we do here?
Greer suggested that Rin Riven would scarcely leave such a large fighting force unmonitored. We performed some scans that turned up spy satellites sending periodic updates from Daxam 4 to a few worlds, including Ryloth.
You think Rin Riven Dai is hiding out here?
Corey said. If Casterfo found it odd that Corey was now a part of the conversation, he gave no sign.
No. I think Ryloth is a relay station of some sort. Rin Riven has enough influence there to bribe local officials into simply not detecting his satellites orbiting Ryloth. What we need to know is where the Ryloth satellites are sending their signals.
The final puzzle piece snapped into place.
Because that's going to tell us where Rin Riven Dai is.
Senator Casterfo nodded, or Joff did. The signal wavered, distorting the image of his face for a moment.
Very likely. We're transmitting the specs you should search for right now. If you can find and splice those satellites, this investigation will take a big leap ahead.
We're on it,
Joff promised, as the computer began processing the received data. Anything else Casterfo might have added was lost when the holo signal blanked out completely. After a moment of silence, it became clear that he would not re-signal. Or could not. Joff drummed his hands against the bulkhead.
We've got a mission. No. We've got a secret mission. Now that's more like it.
Wait, you're going now?
Corey said.
As in right this moment?
Hey, you heard the Senator. It's important.
We haven't even told Senator Organa.
She's busy. And another member of the Galactic Senate just gave us orders.
Corey sat in the co-pilot's seat, datapad clutched to her chest, her loose, curly hair framing her worried face.
Do you want to do this now because you think it's so critical that we shouldn't wait? Or because you're just bored?
Joff grinned. Yes.
But sir...
3PO shuffled out of the back.